Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have been learning about Minhagim in the last couple of weeks when we have been learning. What I'd like to do now is kind of move from general discussions of Minhagim into some of the specific Minhagim, in particular the specific Minhagim that we have during the month of Elul. That's sort of our goal. Now, the thing is that there are a few interesting minhagim during the month of Elul, which I'd like to discuss with you. And we'll discuss these in the sense of trying to figure out what's the source of the minhag, consequently, what is the scope of the minhag, because as we know, when they have the earliest possible source of a practice, that also can indicate something about the parameters of that practice. So one of the minhagim that we have during the month of Elul is that we blow the shofar during Elul, correct?
Yes.
That's a standard practice. Now, have you ever noticed that different communities have different practices of blowing the shofar during Elul? If you go down the street to a certain show called Breuer's, they will blow 30 kolos every morning. And they will blow 30 kolos every afternoon by mincha. In Breuer's, they blow they blow 30 kolos every morning and every afternoon. Now, we don't do that. We blow 10 kolos in the morning. We don't blow it in the afternoon. And is there any basis for what these different practices are based on? So it seems to me that everything in Judaism has to do with lumdus. That's my basic approach to life. And the lumdus question that we could ask about tekiyas shofar during the month of Elul is it an extension or is it a creation? Meaning to say, are we saying that the mitzvah of tekiyas shofar of Rosh Hashanah starts early? We are somehow replicating shofar of Rosh Hashanah? Or are we saying, no. This is entirely a different mitzvah of tekiyas shofar. It is not at all connected to Rosh Hashanah. And maybe the mitzvah of tekiyas shofar is connected to Elul itself. It's not Rosh Hashanah din. It's a halacha of Elul requires some sort of tekiyas shofar. So now, what's the earliest source of tekiyas shofar in Elul? So in the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, the Higger edition, okay? So Michael Higger is a professor of Talmud at the Jewish Theological Seminary. He put out some of the better editions of some of these more obscure works, like the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, in Perek Memhei. So we learn as follows. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, Avam Yom Asa Moshe Bahar, that 40 days Moshe Rabbeinu spent on top of the mountain. That we kind of know. What did Moshe do when he was on top of the mountain? So Kore Bedas Mikra Bayom, Vishona Bedas Mikra Balayla. That's interesting, no? That Moshe Rabbeinu would learn Chumash during the day, and he'd learn Chumash at night. This is only interesting because the Mekubalim say that it's Asar to learn Chumash at night, no? Teresh B'Ksav represents Din. And night represents din. And if you have too much din together, you die. It's bad. Don't do that. So the Mekubalim say that you're only allowed to learn Torah Sheba Al Peh at night. We know that Torah Sheba Al Shebiksav is more chumra than Torah Sheba Al Peh. Just for a simple example, the Alter Rebbe has on Likutei Torah, that if you learn the Pesukim, it says Ayin Tachas Ayin. That's pretty severe, no? Torah Sheba Al Peh is severe. Torah Sheba Al Peh has Rachmanos. Give a few bucks. Pay a few dollars. That's nice. Torah Shebiksav is din. Nighttime is din. We don't want to have too much din. By the way, this is quoted in the Bayer Hetiv in the Rechayim Simen Aleph. Right? This actually makes it to classical halacha books not to learn Chumash at night. By the way, I'm not so frum. Right? Like the Beis Halevi had 14 kulas, right? Including that he learned on Erev Tisha B'Av. Right? Those are like some of the great kulas of the briskers. That they would learn Torah in Erev Tisha B'Av. So I have a kula. I'll also learn Chumash at night. Okay, fine. So Bishor B'Karcha said that Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. He learned Chumash in the day. He learned Chumash at night. After 40 days, he takes the luchos. He goes down to the camp on the 17th day of Tammuz. He breaks the luchos and he kills all the Jewish sinners. And then he does 40 days Banachan until he burns the egel and he grinds it up into dirt, etc. And he gets rid of all the avodah zarah from the Jews. And every shevet
establishes something in that place. Rosh Chodesh Elo, Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Alei Elai Helhara.
On Rosh Chodesh Elo, God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, climb up to the mountain, Vavir Shofar Bamachane, and he blows a shofar. Why? Shari Moshe Ola Lahar. Shall he to old Acher Avodazara, Bakadosh Baruch Hu Nisala Ba'osa Shofar, Shinema Lo Elo Kim Bisru'ah. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu, Rosh Chodesh Elo goes up to the mountain. God blows a shofar, Moshe Rabbeinu is going up to the mountain as if to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, right, don't do Avodah Zarah anymore, Jewish people. No more. Right, we got rid of all the Avodah Zarah. All Elohim b'trua, v'chein hiskinu hachomim sheyu tokim b'shofar b'rosh chodesh tishrei b'chol shana v'shana. Now, this obviously is a terribly corrupted text. This text says that Moshe goes up to the mountain on Rosh Chodesh Elul, and God blows shofar, and therefore the rabbis say that you should blow shofar on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei every year. Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, I don't need rabbis to tell me I have to blow shofar. Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, I blow shofar because that's what the Torah says. Blow the horn. Right? Yom Tzur Yelachem. Right? So this text is terribly corrupted, and when the Rishonim quote this text of the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, for example, in the Sefer HaManhig. The Sefer HaManhig is Ravona Hayarchi. He is a 12th century Rishon Hayarchi. He comes from Provence, no? Yareach is the moon, Lunel. Right? He comes from Provence, the French Riviera. So Ravon Hayarchi in the Sefer HaManhig quotes that the minhag in France is that you blow shofar for a Shredish Elol every day on, and they have a hint from Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer that God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, go up, right, etc. L'chein hiskinu l'tkoa b'rosh chodesh elol b'chol shana v'shana v'atzar fasim osim af misham ve'elach. In other words, the man, he is saying that the text in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer is that therefore the rabbis instituted that you blow shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul, but the Frenchies, pardon the expression, the tzar fasim, they extend the practice. So now, if we take the original source in the uncorrupted version, what would emerge is that there is an inyan to blow shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul. End. And that apparently was the original practice. And then the Frenchies come along, the Tsar Fasim, and they extend the practice. They also blow the shofar after Rosh Chodesh Elul. No? They continue blowing after Rosh Chodesh. But the original practice is you blow shofar only on Rosh Chodesh. Now, if the original practice is that you only blow shofar on Rosh Chodesh, so obviously the idea of the shofar is that it somehow is connected to Rosh Chodesh Elul. That's it, no? They extended it. Meaning, I would contend that the shofar that we're blowing during Elul is not preparation for Rosh Hashanah at all. It is a din of Elul. Moshe goes up to the mountain. Moshe says, Jewish people, stay away from Avodah Zarah. Hashem has a shofar sounding as he goes up to the mountain. To remind us of that, we blow shofar on that one day, Rosh Chodesh Elul. As if, like, so what should you have in mind when you hear the shofar? Don't worship idols. That's it. The Frenchies extended the practice to blow, right, the entire time until Rosh Hashanah, no? This Sefer Rokeach, by the way, who is a German Rishon, has a practice of blowing for 40 days. 40 days means that they blow shofar all the way until Yom Kippur. Does anyone do that?
No.
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know if anyone who blows shofar after Rosh Hashanah, right, before Yom Kippur also.
Can we take a break?
So we take a break at Rosh Hashanah to confuse the Satan, etc. But I would argue as follows. If I take an approach of the Sefer Rokeach, that there's 40 days of blowing shofar, or I take an approach that the Frenchies were saying that we blow the entire time, which ends up being our practice, so one could argue maybe it's an extension of the shofar in Rosh Hashanah. However, if the minhag was only on Rosh Chodesh Elul, so then presumably that minhag is connected to Elul, not to that minhag is connected to Elul and not to what's it called and not to Rosh Hashanah at all. There is a Sefer HaMinhagim of Rabbi Isaac Tirna. Rabbi Isaac Tirna was one of the Rebbeim of the Ramah. And Rabbi Isaac Tirna in the Sefer HaMinhagim writes
that mina kasher to blow shofar from Rosh Chodesh Elo until Zechar Bris, which is Erev Rosh Hashanah, and then we stop blowing, and then we blow again on Rosh Hashanah to have 30 days. V'smach lezeh tiku b'chodesh shofar, chodesh shalem of 30 days. Right? In other words, what I have is sources in Yishonah that you're supposed to blow all 30 days. I have other sources that they only blew on Rosh Chodesh Elul. And I would argue that the different sources indicate something about the nature of the minhag. For example, I was away this past week in California. No? Yosemite is gorgeous, by the way. Right? I'm telling you, like, you've been there, Meira? If you want to imagine what Gan Eden was like, go to Yosemite. This is the basic idea. Now, the thing is, do I have to blow shofar on my own? I didn't have a minion. By the way, when I go on vacation, maybe I shouldn't put this on tape. When I go on vacation, I try to avoid Jews as much as possible. So in this case, there was a wedding, so I had to see Jews at least at the wedding. But I try to avoid Jews as much as possible. I try not to daven with a minion. I want to get away from you. Hey, let's be honest. I need my time off. So, am I supposed to bring a shofar along? Right, there was a known rabbi who on YouTube posted some videos of himself blowing shofar when he was on vacation in the Grand Canyon. Apparently, like, the echo was awesome.
Oh, my God.
Are you supposed to do that? So, I would argue that it's not necessarily correct that you have to do it. You see, if the mitzvah of tekiyah shofar during Elul is an extension of the mitzvah in Rosh Hashanah, so just like on Rosh Hashanah, it's a chovas hayachid. On Rosh Hashanah, if I can't go to shul for a minyan, so I have to hear shofar anyway, no? So therefore, here also will be a chovas hayachid. However, if the mitzvah of tekiyah shofar on Rosh Hashanah, tekiyah shofar during Elul, excuse me, is not an extension of Rosh Hashanah, if it's a new din in Elul, so then maybe it's a din only that I need, maybe it's a din only when I have a minyan. The Tzitz Eliezer, in the bottom source over here, Tzitz Eliezer notes, Nearly barely idach gisa shetakonas hatkiya haisa rak betzibur v'lo biyochid mitaima dechod etiknu me'ein hamu'ura tiknu betakonas hatkiya harei haisa mnei shekocha hisnagu b'shasha ala moshe lahabra ishkodesh elo v'shama kosov mefura sheviru kol b'machane moshe ala lahar. Right, says the Tzitz Eliezer that if the original source of tekiya shofar during Elul is because Moshe goes up to the mountain, right, like the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says, so then the Torah writes, Heviru kol b'machane. It's a din in the machane, it's a din in the camp, it's a din with a minyan. If I don't have a minyan, no tekiyah shofar. Right, do people do that when people daven b'yechidus during Elul? So some people like to blow shofar just because they like the way it sounds. It inspires them. But the Tzitz Eliezer is saying that the mitzvah of tekiyah shofar during Elul, the minhag of tekiyah shofar during Elul, is only if you have a minyan. Absent a minyan, no obligation.
Is there a bracha involved?
There's no bracha involved.
Right?
So
there's no difference between just being alone and being with...
There's no bracha levatala.
Right, so the thing is that the mitzvah shofar is clearly in the Torah only on... Good question. As we gave a shiur about whether you make a bracha on a minhag, and we said minhagim that involve an action that are an extension of something else. But I would say a minhag that's an extension of something else that the rabbis say you have to do is different than the rabbis say it's a nice thing to do. Odds are when the rabbis say yontif sheni, they're saying you have to keep yontif. So therefore we make a bracha. I don't know if I'm such a bad Jew, pardon, if I don't pull shofar during Elul. And therefore the rabbis aren't really saying that I have to do it. It's not a full-fledged obligation, Yitzharas Minhag. Right? It is a nice thing. If it's a nice thing, you don't get a bracha. Again, no one in the history of Judaism, to the best of my knowledge, has ever made a bracha when they blow shofar during Elul. You're both asking the question, why not, according to the way we explained, a positive, active minhag that Jews do should get a bracha. It is a fair question, but I think the answer is that the Chazal are not saying that you really have to do it. They're saying that you should do it. Right? That's the Lashon, by the way, the picture of Laza, Shigiyu Tolkim B'Shofar, you should do it. It doesn't sound like that there's a Chiyuv, but I'm not sure. Now, let's just talk further. The practice in Breuer is that they blow 30 kolos. Sounds like the 30 kolos that they blow
is because it's an extension of Tkiya Shofar and Rosh Hashanah. Right, the bare minimum of shofar to hear in Rosh Hashanah presumably is 30 kolos, right? We're not sure. Am I supposed to be tashrat, tashat, tarat? So therefore we say, do it all. No, this is the brisker min hatorah minayin. The answer is tekiya shofar. Where do you have the chumras to do everything mikayach safek? Answer is tekiya shofar, we do everything. No? That's what it comes down to. But if I say that it's an extension of Rosh Hashanah, so then I should really blow 30 kolos. Our practice that we only blow 10 kolos presumably is saying, you know what? It's not really an extension, it's a new din. There's a tshuva in the Shevet HaKohosi, he was like a Rav in London, I believe, a number of years ago. The Shevet HaKohosi says that maybe for shofar during Elul, you don't need a kosher shofar. You could have a shofar with like a crack in it, no? Maybe you could use a kazoo. By the way, kazoo is the most useless instrument after the triangle. The triangle, I always wanted to be an orchestra triangle player. Because, look, all right, you don't have to know anything about music. Right? That's all you got to do. It's like, awesome. Right? And I think they're unionized, so I think the first string violinist and the triangle player get the same salary. Which is kind of outrageous when you think about it, which is why I always wanted to play the triangle. But what can we do? Right? But I ended up becoming a rabbi instead. Now, the practice of blowing shofar during mincha is interesting. Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Ramah writes, I have it here somewhere on the sheet, I think. I don't know. Maybe I don't. Maybe I don't. I thought I put it on the sheet. Yeah, I guess I didn't. But the Ramah writes in Tav Kuf Pei Aleph that you should blow shofar shachris and arvis. So Moshe Feinstein says it can't really mean Ma'ariv. Obviously, you can't pull shofar at Ma'ariv. Rather, it means at Mincha. And when Moshe says, you know what the Ramah probably meant to the community who, for whatever the reason, didn't pull shofar at Shacharis, should blow it at Mincha. Somehow, the practice in Breuer developed that they blow Shacharis and Mincha. Now, again, in theory, we could say that this also depends on our question. If the shofar of Elul is an extension of the shofar for Rosh Hashanah, so we only blow by Shacharis, no? You don't blow in the morning, you don't blow in the afternoon. However, if it's a new din, if it's a din maybe out a tshuva of some sort to avoid avodah zarah, so then maybe we should blow at mincha as well. Right? Now, if that's the case, it ends up being a contradiction in lumdis for Breuer's people. Because Breuer's people both 30 kolos, shachris, and mincha. Right? And l'chore, that doesn't make any sense. Because if it's 30 kolos, it's an extension of Rosh Hashanah, and then you don't have to blow mincha time. So I don't really understand the practice, but let's go on. Very quickly, because time is getting later than I thought. There's a minhag during the month of Elul that actually does not make it to the Mishnah Berurah. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch quotes that anshei ma'is anoygen livdok b'chodesh zeh tefillin u'mezuzos shalahen v'chor sheyimotzei sham badak b'she'ar mitzvos yiskenu. In other words, anshei ma'is, super orthodox Jews, check their tefillin and mezuzos during Elul. That's what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says. The Mishnah Berurah never quotes this idea, even though this idea has a source that the Mechota writes that you're supposed to check your tefillin and mezuzos once a year, based on pasuk miyamin yamima. And once you're checking it once a year, you may as well do it during Elul, because Elul is like super religious time. That's what emerges. Now, my understanding is, and the Tosfos and Menachos discusses whether we paskin Yomim Yomima is talking about the chukah of tefillin, or whether it's talking about the chukah of the yontif, and whether there's a real obligation to check tefillin. La halacha la maisa, we don't have any obligation to check tefillin, no? Rish Shlomo Zalman Orbach writes that a mezuzah, it says in Shochanah, you're supposed to check. But that's only because the mezuzah was left outside and was exposed to the elements and it could get bad. Tefillin is inside the box. No obligation to check it. No obligation to check it. Because the likelihood of it getting ruined is really insignificant. Tzitzis is a discussion. Shulchan says a Yerushalmi should check tzitzis every day. That's because the Magen Avraham writes that tzitzis often, just this morning, my talis string got caught on the chair. No? Like, this happens, like, all the time. So if you have to check it, because it's likely to rip.
Okay, I got that. My tefillin are going to be fine. And Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that, you know what, we should not check our tefillin and mezuzahs unless it's really necessary. I often get shaylos from people that they say, such and such is going on in my life, I want to check my tefillin. I want to check my mezuzahs. No, people, like when bad things happen, people check mezuzahs. No, I don't want to tell people not to do it, because why not do mitzvahs the best possible way? But you have to realize that checking tefillin can ruin your tefillin. Because you open them up, it could mess up the squareness of it. Because once you open it, it comes down. Checking mezuzahs also, it's not so good for the mezuzah. The mezuzah is secure. You have to open the whole thing up. By the way, checking a mezuzah, you don't have to go to a sofer. Technically, when we check a mezuzah, we're only checking it to make sure that the letters didn't crack, which means you open it up and you read Shema. The assumption is everyone can read the words of Shema themselves. So you read it. If it's all fine, you close it up. Some people like to check the mezuzahs, and sometimes they have these mezuzah checkers who are quacks, who try to take away all of your money and send it to some island in the Caribbean for them and their wives, girlfriends, whatever, to live forever after. I don't think there's a mitzvah to support those people in the Caribbean. Practically speaking, I don't know. I don't encourage people to check when bad things happen to people in life. And they do happen. People, we all go through difficult times. I would recommend that what we should do is take on ourselves to do more mitzvos, to study more Torah, to daven with more kavana. Things that we all know relax and we should do. To assume that there's some heebie-jeebie Kabbalistic thing that maybe my mezuzah, yeah, a mezuzah is supposed to be protection, but if a bad thing is happening, you think it's because your mezuzah is bad, you think it's because you're not keeping Lashon Hara. What's more likely, that God is punishing you? I don't know. I don't think it's so likely that your mezuzah is bad. I think it's much more likely that you speak Lashon Hara than your mezuzah is bad. I'll say it like that. So I am not such a fan of Kabbalistic mezuzah checkers. One more minhag that I want to discuss, that we have during the month of Elul, which is the minhag of reciting L'David Hashem Ori. The Mishnah Berurah writes that in our countries, in Nohagim B'medina Sim, Rosh Chodesh Elul Ad Yom HaKippur, Noma B'cho Yom, Achag Ma'at Tfila, Mizun L'David Hashem Ori, Bokeh Ve'erev, Ve'omer Ma'achrav Kaddish, Anu Nohagim Noma Ad Shmini Atzer So'ad B'chlal. And the Mishnah Berurah says that our practice is that we say L'David Hashem Ori, not only until Yom HaKippurim, but we say it all the way until Shmini Atzeres, including Shmini Atzeres. Now, where does this practice come from? The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch quotes a practice as well, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch tells us that this practice is based on the Medrash that L'David Hashem Ori, that Ori is on Rosh Hashanah, light is on Rosh Hashanah, Yishi is Yom HaKippurim, where the salvation comes on Yom HaKippurim. On Rosh Hashanah, we see the light. We see that God is the king of the entire world. Therefore, we see that there is a sense of truth that is evading us all year, and we try to do tshuva. Yom HaKippurim comes, and that's our salvation, when we actually do the tshuva. Ki it's b'neini b'suko remes l'sukkis. The reason why we continue saying L'David Hashem Ori throughout Sukkis is because the pasuk says Ki yisbineini b'sukkah, that God hides us in His shelter in the sukkah, and that alludes to the Sukkis. Therefore, it would seem that we say L'David Hashem Ori so long as we sit in the sukkah. There are different minhagim, whether you say L'David Hashem Ori on Shmini Atzeres or not. The Mishnah Berurah says you should say L'David Hashem Ori because the Mishnah Berurah is a fan of sitting in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. In Hasidish communities, where they don't sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, if you look in Hasidish Siddurim, it says that you say L'David Hashem Ori through Hoshana Rabbah, not on Shmini Atzeres. Because there's no sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. That is why our practices that we say on Shmini Atzeres are not Simchas Torah. Yeah, Shmini Atzeres, we sit in the sukkah, Simchas Torah, we don't, that's what emerges. Now, there's a few things to note over here. First of all, the Torah Tamim and his Sefer on the Siddur, called the Baruch Sha'amar, notes that he thinks that this minhag of saying L'David Hashem Ori on this time of year might not be correct. Yes, based on the Medrash, that Ori is Rosh Hashanah, Yishi is Yom HaKippurim, etc., beautiful, but there's another Medrash. There's another Medrash, right? That Medrash, by the way, is found in the Medrash Tehillim Buber edition, Mizmar Chav Zayin. But in the Vayikra Rabbah, in Achrimos, Parsha Chav Aleph, there's a different edition. Right? L'David Hashem Ori v'yishim mi'ira, Rebbe Elazar patar kraya, b'yam. Rebbe Elazar explains the Pesukim on the Yamsuf. Ori b'yam. Hashem is my light, refers to the Yam. Shenemar v'yoter as halayla. Yishi is his siyatu re'u as Yeshua as Hashem. Mi'ira, right? V'yam Moshe al-tira'u. In other words, according to the Medrash, the other Medrash, L'David Hashem Ori v'Yishi refers to Kriyas Yamsuf. And says the Torah Tamima, maybe it would be a very nice practice in light of this Medrash,
to sit with David Hashem Uri on Pesach to commemorate Kriyas Yamsuf, based on the other Medrash. Apparently, that's not done. It's interesting, why not? Now, Breuers doesn't say with David Hashem Uri at all. Why not? So, I'll tell you why not. What?
Because they do 30 times the shofar.
Right, they do 30 times the shofar, and davening's long enough anyway. So, like, end. Right, so that certainly is a very practical approach. Gila, thank you. Right, we want to practically end davening at the right time. But this minig of nothing with David Hashem Uri at all, in the Tshuvas of the Divrei Yatziv, he quotes that his grandfathers didn't say. The Divrei Yatziv is the Kloisenberger. The Kloisenberger Tzan Chasidim also do not say David Hashem Uri at all. Why not? So some contend, and there's a beautiful shir by Schneier Lyman discussing this, that the earliest source to say L'davar Hashem Uri this time of year is found in a book called the Chemdas Yomim. The Chemdas Yomim is an interesting book. The Chemdas Yomim is a book that is attributed to a fellow named Nasan Ha'azosi, who we call Nathan of Gaza, who was the prophet of Shabtai Tzvi. Now, anything that smells even remotely of Sabbateanism, the Breuers community spits at and throws in the garbage and says, we don't want you at all. Chemdas Yomim is widely assumed to be authored. Chemdas Yomim is the earliest source of saying the David Hashem Uri, and the assumption for those who don't say it is that Chemdas Yomim is a book written by Nathan of Gaza. However, if you look in Avraham Yari's book, Ta'alumot Sefer. In Ta'alumot Sefer, he argues that no. Even though Rabbi Yaakov Emden and others felt that Chemdas Yomim is a Sabbatean work, it's written by Nathan of Gaza, really is a Sefer Kadosh, it has so many holy things. By the way, the psukim that we recite before Tekiyah Shofar, the psukim that go Kras Atan, you know the, right? You know the earliest source of that? Chemdas Yomim. Do they say it in prayers? Koyli Shamatam. They don't say it. Huh? Okay. The Krasot, Rosh Devarcha, Emes, Koyli Shamata, right? Aroi Vavdu Cholatov, those six psukim that we say, that's spelled Krasatan, that comes from Chemdas Yomim. Now, if you're a purist, not to do anything from Chemdas Yomim, so you don't say those psukim either. It happens that Yari argues that although Rabbi Yaakov Emden felt that the Chemdas Yomim was authored by Nathan of Gaza, that's not correct, and the Chemdas Yomim is a wonderful, holy sefer, and so many good Jews have been into the Chemdas Yomim, and therefore many recite the David Hashem Uri. I would argue as follows, that maybe little David Hashem Uri is somewhat connected to Kiyas Shofar. In other words, the minig that the Ramah quotes, that you should blow shofar in the morning and the afternoon. Most places don't blow shofar in the afternoon. So what did they do in the afternoon instead? They said the David Hashem Uri. Now, so you want to commemorate Elul somehow. So you say something that hits at many Elul-type themes. Right, that the fact that God is out there and God will save us, that's like an Elul theme in the sense of God is in the fields, like the Alter Rebbe has in a number of places, and it's all there. It's all a beautiful type of Elul idea. So maybe that's why we say it, to replace the Tekiyah Shofar in the afternoon. Now, you should note that there are two practices, whether you say V'davar Hashem Uri after Mincha or after Ma'ariv. Chassidim V'davar Nusach Svarad say it after Mincha. Right, Nusach Hashanah says after Ma'ariv, that connects to the issue that we alluded to earlier as to whether there's a prohibition to say Tehillim at night. If you assume that nighttime is when you only do Torah Shabbat Peh, so then you have to say L'David Hashem Uri at Mincha. Yes?
I have a question. Maybe I missed something somewhere.
Probably not.
I'm just confused about, it sounds like a little bit that we're just throwing in a mitzvah, maybe it's going to be a good idea, or we're throwing this in and we can't do it then, so let's do this instead. And that just sounds very,
Yeah.
Yeah. it sounds like it's going to be
so. So I would say this. In other words, there is a certain evolutionary process of minhagim. There's no question that minhagim developed. Sometimes we're not exactly sure how they developed. The best chance that we have to figure it out is looking at the original source. Right? That's what we're trying to do.
So tekiyah shofar during Elul, the original source sounds like it's only Rosh Chodesh Elul. Right? Checking tefillin during Elul, the original source really sounds like you don't have to check your tefillin at all. The David Hashem Ori during Elul, the original source would be as connected to Kriyas Yamsuf as to Elul.
So,
why don't we do it during Nisan? I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. What we're trying to do is like work backwards on some level. We have this practice, and we're trying to figure out what does it teach us? Like, so to speak, what's the meaning that I can get out of this practice? Even though, Lemaisa, I really don't know, and I'm really grasping for straws. So one of the reasons why Minhagim are such a challenge is because we do it. Everybody's doing it, right? But why? So we want to find meaning in it by going through the original sources. Sometimes we're more successful, sometimes we're less successful, but that's what we're attempting to do.
Okay.
I don't know if I answered your question, but I'm... Okay, so this is what we wanted to discuss, Kafra, and have a good night. Thank you for coming and listening.
We're meeting next week.